Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber from Everyone Loves Guitar, and I've got a really cool guitar player with us today. He's a great guy, really straightforward, and I love his hairstyle because it looks just like mine. And he is originally from Florida, which is where I live. So we're lucky to have guitarist Chris Condon with us today. He's a session player and a touring pro. He's currently living in Nashville. He got his BA in jazz studies at UNF, which is University of North Florida, up in Jupiter, which is on the northern east coast.
Jacksonville.
Jacksonville. Why do I have Jupiter? Jacksonville, which is way
My hometown.
Yeah, okay. Well, Jupiter's his hometown. He went to school in Jacksonville. Ba-dum-bum. After relocating to Nashville in 2011, he quickly found work on the road with several artists, including Billy Ray Cyrus, She Daisy, Drake White, Morgan Frazier, Logan Mize, Brent Cobb, Granger Smith, Cody Johnson, and many others. He's currently the musical director and the guitar player for Billy Ray Cyrus. So that's a pretty big thing. When he's not on tour on stage, Chris can be found tracking guitars or producing at a studio and other studios in the Nashville area. He's a growing session practice or teaching students what it takes to be a professional guitar player, giving Skype lessons. Chris, thanks so much for your time. I'm really happy to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, so the first thing, I'm always intimidated when I'm speaking to someone who's got a degree in jazz. Because intellectually, you guys are just off the charts, because you kind of have to be to even play jazz, let alone get a degree in it. So be gentle on me. Don't throw around your IQ points.
That's really funny.
Hey, you're a very talented player, and all you need to do is spend some time on your website. I just wanted to point that out to people. Chris's website is at Chris Condon Guitar. It's Chris, ChrisCondonGuitar.com, and his website's really amazing. And I probably spent an hour on there, and that was literally just scratching the surface. And so I wanted to ask you, it's probably one of the best, if not the actual best guitar website I've seen, because it's very comprehensive. You have it well organized, which is makes getting to know you a lot easier. And it's really current. And I was curious if you maintain that yourself, or do you have someone that you say, hey, throw these new tracks on there? Or
yeah, so I guess it was made, my buddy made it. I had him do it. And I don't know, Squarespace or one of those self-maintaining things.
That's a Squarespace site. Interesting.
Yeah. So it's pretty basic little thing. But, you know, I update what I can. Then my buddy, he's good at, like, the Photoshop thing. So if I, you know, have to give him a logo to put on, he'll tweak it and make it formatted so it fits in there. And then, yeah, there's a few things I want to update there with the gear and then, you know, the online lessons and promoting different stuff. But yeah, just trying to keep it going.
And you got great photos on here, man. Your taste, the guitars that you're playing here, they all look like I see them. I'm like, man, I want to play one of those. I want to play. Yeah, man, they're all like, you know, really cool looking guitars.
Well, thanks.
So, yeah, man. You came to Nashville 6 years ago, which is not a long time, yet you're super busy. And I remember when we first spoke to set up this call, you told me the story about what prompted you to move up there and how that went down. Would you share that story with us? I thought it was really cool.
Yeah. So I was, you know, I was in Jacksonville doing the jazz studies thing. I did that. And then I moved back to Jupiter and I was playing in club bands, you know, with buddies and different people. And then I was teaching guitar full time. And one of my students brought in a Brad Paisley record. And I was never in the country, you know, as, you know, into shred and jazz and rock, whatever. And I really dug it. You know, it's pretty cliche, but the whole Brad Paisley thing. But
yeah, you're definitely not the first guy who's told me that they got turned on to country because they heard Brad Paisley.
And honestly, it was the tone. It was like I was like, oh my God. And then I had to learn these licks and stuff for my student, and I got really into it. And I just started getting more into it, and then I just picked up some, you know, country gigs around town, and then we were playing this regular gig on like Tuesday or Wednesday nights, and it was put on by the radio station every week, And, you know, guest artists would come in that were on the road touring. And this one, well, every week, the guy at the radio station was like, hey, when are you moving to Nashville? I was like, I'm not, you know, I'm never going to move. It's pointless. You know, it's too above me. I'm happy doing this. And then, you know, but in the back of my head, I was always like, man, what does the future lie? Because if I just keep doing these bar gigs, and what's the ceiling of this? And like, you know, how far could this go? So I wanted to branch out, but I was very nervous because, like, I'm not good enough. And then an artist came through, and I was talking to the guitar player, and I was like, man, how are you doing this? Like, you're touring. This is what I want to do. You know, this is my dream. And he's like, well, you got to solve the geographic issue, and you have to move. So I was like, wow, that's heavy. So the next day, the guy from the radio station calls me up. He's like, hey, man, when are you moving to Nashville? I was like, well, I told you, I'm not. It's not going to happen. So he's like, well, what if I can get you an audition? I was like, what? So that freaked me out because I was like, wow, it's like a Nashville audition. At this time, you know, the whole Nashville thing was such a mysterious thing. It was not real. So I was super excited, and I went and I auditioned, and I was so nervous, and I didn't end up getting the gig because the band was playing in Tampa, which is like 3 hours away. So the next morning I drove to Tampa and auditioned, and you know, I didn't get the gig.
Where were they playing? Just curious. Was Skippers or something like that?
What's that?
Were they playing at Skippers?
It was some amphitheater.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, but so I auditioned, and then I talked to the tour manager, and he's like, well, you know, you're living in Florida, and you know, you should come up here, and we didn't really get a vibe for you because you're so nervous and you didn't say anything. You need to come and get some Nashville stage time and just really kind of feel it out. And I was like, wow, okay, well, I guess I should just do this, you know, because I was 27. And I was like, well, I want to do it before I'm 28. I just want to make this move. So I literally just packed up my car and just went. And I knew two people. I had no plan. I just quit all my gigs and teaching and packed up my hatchback and just drove. And it's funny because on the way there, my one buddy who he had a room for me, I called him. I was like, hey, man, where am I going? You know what? I'm excited. I'm coming up. He's like, oh, man, it just fell through. So I was like, I don't have a room. So I'm literally driving up there with
holy crap,
with no plan. So my other friend, thankfully, he let me sleep on his floor for the first few days. And then as luck had it, I had a friend in Florida who knew a guy up here, and he had a room in a basement who was like opening up that week. And I rented that room and, you know, just kind of just started going from there and just, yeah, taking every gig I could.
Yeah, I think that's a great story because in any profession, but for some reason, specifically in music, I think people tend to use the term overnight sensation really unfairly. And that's because no one saw you sleeping on a basement floor. No one saw you driving up there alone like, holy fuck, what? You know, I hope I have a place to sleep tonight, or, you know, I hope I can start making money in the next few days.
Yeah.
And that's the big risks that people take. And there's a, you know, a fear factor associated with that, both emotionally and in reality, because you got no money and you're thinking, I need to do this, this, and this. And that's the part of, I think, any business that people don't see. The dog days, because nobody wants to see that. You know, who wants? It's not glamorous. Say, hey, can I watch you hang out in your basement in a place you're not even, you know, that you're renting from somebody, you know?
Right.
So, but that's, I really like that story, man. Okay, so you move up to Nashville 6 years ago. No one knows you. And since that time, you've literally toured with dozens and dozens of acts, some of them very well known. You've done loads of studio sessions. And again, I would encourage everybody to check out Chris's website at Chris Condon Guitar. And you have a shit ton of sponsors behind you, which are also listening to your website. So I guess I have two questions. First question is, what did you do in the beginning to get things going? Because I can only assume that your success today has been the result of like one massive hustle since day one.
Yeah. I mean, the hustle never stops. So it pretty much just taken everything that came my way and just saying yes to everything, and then just trying to meet as many people and sit in whenever you can. And hopefully along the way, somebody gives you a chance, you know. But Nashville, it's, well, maybe any place is funny, because when you first move here, you know, no one knows you. No one's really going to – you got to be validated, you know. So no one's going to, like, take a chance and just hire you right out of the bat. So you got to kind of fall on your ass a lot and then just kind of prove yourself. And, you know, luckily some – you know, I got a gig. Actually, my buddy who I was on the floor staying at his place – we went out the first night, and then he introduced me to a guy, and I got a gig like literally the first night I came to town.
Oh man, how good did that? How good did you feel? Like,
it was unreal.
You must have been so grateful.
Yeah, and it was like, you know, just a bar gig, whatever. And it was just like, wow,
got money. You know? Who cares?
You know? Yeah, and I was like, I'm actually playing, and it was such a big deal, and it was so cool. And you know, I think the biggest thing coming here, what really helped me was treating it like school, not treating it like I'm going to go do something. It was more like I'm going to go to Nashville and try to learn, because, you know, there's always the naysayers. And when I was leaving Florida, everyone's like, oh, you'll be back in 6 months, whatever. It's like, cool. Well, great. If I am, then so be it. But at least hopefully I'll learn something in the process and, you know, get better. But I always had that mentality. I still to this day, I think, you know, the quote, what is it? Sometimes you're the teacher, but you're always the student, is a big thing, because, you know, you could learn from everyone. And this town's crazy like that, because there's 15-year-old kids here that are just kicking ass that, you know, you can learn from literally everyone. So coming here and treating it as a learning process was a big help. Because I think a lot of people come and want to set the town on fire, and that just doesn't happen. But
yeah, you know, I interviewed Walter Carter from Carter Vintage, and he said to me, he goes, you know, the stupidest thing someone could do is be a guitar player and come to Nashville.
Oh, man. Jeez. Yeah. Yeah, it's so saturated, and people are so damn good. And but
so when let me ask you, when you got – so basically, and I agree with you. And I, as I've gotten older, I've done that more, because I tend to be type A, put a lot of pressure on myself. And when I don't do that, when I say, okay, this is a little experiment, which is, it sounded like, you know, a test, you know, in marketing, they call it tests. Everything's a test. Whatever you do, it's a test. You get feedback. So when I look at things, the actual project, even as a test, it's so much, it actually takes a lot of pressure for me. It takes a lot of pressure off. Did you find that? So like when you came up there, like you said, okay, this is an experiment. If it works, great. If it doesn't, when I do that, I find it takes a lot of pressure off of me. You know, you use the word experiment. I use the word test, because it's industry specific, let's say. And you said it was like school. For me, I say something's a test. I'm testing this out to see if it works. And when I do that, it takes the pressure off me, as opposed to, this is something I'm doing. I got to make it work. Which I want to always, you know, it doesn't change the amount of intensity and effort. It just changes my expectations a little bit. Did you find the same thing?
Yeah, it definitely lessens the load.
Yeah.
In that regard, you know, treating it like that makes it more enjoyable, maybe, too.
Yeah, much.
You know, because, I don't know, I think that's, you never stop learning, and that's why I think I love this whole process, not just guitar, but just the music in general, learning, but everything is the learning process. Mm. And I think if you keep that mentality, it just makes everything a lot easier and less stressful, like you said, you know. Now, I came and I got that gig, and then, you know, I got another gig and I was doing work, but when winter hit, the first winter, holy shit, that was depressing.
Yeah, everybody says things slow down. And
I was like, man, what am I doing? And that was tough, because, I mean, you know, when you move to a town, and you don't know anyone, that's really tough because you got no one. You just kind of, you know, no one's throwing you a bone because you have nothing to offer them. And that's the funny thing about, you know, maybe anything, business or anything else, you know, people, if you can help them, you're going to get ahead. Right. It's just funny how that works. But I was talking to my friend about that in Florida. And I was like, man, I don't know. I might go home. I don't know. This is things are really not clicking. He's like, man, just spend a year there. I know it's tough, but just see how it happens after a year. And then luckily I made some friends. And then the next thing you know, it's like, wow, I love this place. But that goes to the biggest thing of not giving up and just pushing forward, because showing up is half the battle, right? Just being there. Man.
Yeah. So I remember I read a book. Remember Lou Ferrigno, the bodybuilder?
Oh yeah.
He wrote a book. I read it many, many years ago. And he said, working out's not hard. Getting to the gym is hard.
Yeah. That's it. Just showing up.
Yeah. Just showing up. Yeah. I wanted to ask you, when you got that first job the first night, did you feel like, wow, maybe this is like a sign the universe is sort of like, you know, supporting me?
Yeah. I mean, it's unreal. I mean, that's shit. I mean, move to town, you get a gig literally the first night. I mean,
No. Move to Nashville and you get a gig. That's a big difference.
Yeah. Well, I mean, luckily that's a luck thing. You know, that's because it's just the planets aligned, because my friend knew a guy and I guess we hit it off. Talking is literally on the street on Second Avenue. We were bullshitting. And I was like, dude, I just moved here today. And he's like, man, I got a gig. And Nashville's funny like that because there's so many people and gigs go in and out and everyone's looking for players that literally there is so much work here. So maybe that's not rare that it did happen so quick, because I think it was just right place, right time. And then that, you know, I went and did that and met some people and then hit it off. And then, you know, I learned a lot doing that, you know. And then the first thing I remember, the guy, he was like, man, you're timid, you know, turn up, you know, dig in. And, you know, that was the first thing. First lesson was like, you know, play with some balls, you know, go after it. And if you fuck up.
Yeah, it, right.
You know. So that was the lesson one of Nashville. But yeah, that was a trip. And then I got a gig. A friend knew somebody who knew someone who was looking for a guy to tour. The word tour is so funny. But it's just in like a Kia SUV traveling around. And it was a trip, man.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Nobody sees that. They may see you pulling up in a bus, a giant. I'm sure you have Billy Ray's probably got a gorgeous tour bus now, right?
Yeah.
Right. And you probably even have a bathroom on there, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe two bathrooms. But, you know, they see that. They didn't see the friggin' Kia or whatever it was, the SUV you were driving on your first, quote, tour, as you say, you know?
Well, there's more Kias than buses, I'll tell you that much in Nashville. So anyone who's coming to Nashville, just get ready to jump in a van or a car or an SUV and just schlep around the country, because that's the reality.
Sure.
The bus gig is like, that's it's awesome, and you know, just be grateful if you get one of those.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've talked with guys that have been with artists for a number of years, and where they started off in the station wagon, then they got a small van, then they got a bigger van, then they got a small bus, and now, you know, 7 or 8 years into it, which is an extraordinarily long time to be with the same artist, the artist gets signed to a major, and they've got that, you know, that situation. But it's 7 or 8 years. That's not, you know, a walk in the park.
Yeah, it's so funny. I was reading this book, and in the book, it's talking about the music industry, and the guy says, it's a funny quote, but people who, he felt unfortunate for people who started their touring life in a bus, because the line that says, you know, vans build character, buses build ego.
Yeah.
And I think everyone should schlep around in the, the car around the country, because it's good.
For a little while anyway.
Yeah.
Well, it allows you to appreciate when something else
comes. Oh, man.
And it's like you're like so grateful to like have a cushion under your ass, and maybe you could stretch out your legs or something like
that. Yeah, it's awesome.
Hey, so how's the tour going with Billy Ray? You guys are getting ready to wrap up, no?
Yeah, it's a trip. It's the best gig I've ever had. It's awesome. The whole crew is just so great to be around, and the shows are so fun, and Billy is just, man, he's awesome. Yeah, he's just a total trip, and he's really, really just a really nice, great person.
What have you learned most from working with him? Because he's got so much experience.
Man, one is, you know, try to get your hands in everything you can, because he's a prime example of, like, really the hustle. You know, I mean, that guy, my God, he's done it all. And he ain't slowing down, you know, because that's the biggest thing he says, is try to just get in as many things as you can, because he's done the TV, the movies, the music, everything. And that's, you know, how he's really kept it going. And he just has a good attitude about the whole thing. He just wants to have fun.
Hmm. Yeah. How did you get that gig, actually? Just curious about that.
I was producing a guy, Derek Jones, and Billy heard some of the stuff, and then Billy wrote a song, and we did a track. We cut his song, Derek sang on it, and he liked it, and he was like, "Hey, I want to meet this guy." And I went over to his house, and we jammed, and he's like, "Man, let's do this. Let's play." So that's it.
Was that weird, first time going over there? Or by that time, you'd play with so many guys that level? Or,
I mean, it's Billy Ray. I mean, yeah. Of course. I'm so anxious. Like, wow. And then going to his house, it's like, so it's surreal, yeah, shit. It's right. Like only in Nashville type deal, or, right, you know, where you just pull it up. And all those experiences are just so cool whenever you get the chance to do those really cool things. And yeah, it was super exciting, and it's still just so cool. I mean, he's a legend.
Yeah, like I could see calling, you know, like your buddy, you know, you have a good buddy down in Florida, it's probably calling, "Man, I'm about to go to Billy Ray Cyrus's."
Yeah.
Because I'd be like that. I'd be calling my wife and be like, "And I'm walking in Billy Ray Cyrus's door now."
Yeah, and what made it so cool is he couldn't have been nicer.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's like the nicest dude. So that's a huge thing. Like,
well, you know what I found, though? And I'm a little older, so I may have had a little more experiences. I grew up in a very blue-collar, lower-middle-class environment, and I had those typical messages of, oh, you know, successful people, they're always ripping people off. You know, the negative stuff. And I found that's the 180 degrees opposite. Virtually all, if not all, of the successful people I've met are in any business, and I've been working for myself for over 20 years now, are totally opposite. They're the most nicest people you'll ever meet. And they have to, because you can't be a dick and, like, get ahead is the bottom line.
And I see that time and time again, where it's like the assholes are always, like, the young people, and, like, the best players and the most accomplished people are always, like, so humble and nice.
Yeah.
And that's a huge life lesson,
right,
to take, you right, know, because, you know, they got nothing to prove or whatever, and they're just cool to be around.
And they're,
from time to time again, it happens. Every time I meet someone who I'm, like, nervous to meet, and it's like I meet them, it's like, wow, couldn't have been cooler.
Yeah. Well, I've learned that everybody's kind of the same. Everybody's got, you know, kids that don't listen to them, you know, too much shit on their plate. You know, no matter how much money they're making, they got too many bills to pay, too many people tugging at them. And everybody's the same. It's just the way it is. And they just happen to have a different path. But all the guys I've met like that, whether in business or now I'm meeting guys like that in music, it's the same. You know, you get on the phone with them and, you know, it's the same. Everybody's got the same stuff that they're worried about. Is their family safe? Are their kids okay? You know, that's just normal stuff.
Yeah.
You're going to Australia next year with Billy.
It looks like it. I hope.
Have you ever been there before?
No. So that's going to be super exciting.
That's very cool, man. I wish you luck on that.
Thank you.
What else are you working on now, Chris, that you're excited about besides the Billy Ray tour?
Well, just started this new, I guess, band or solo project thing with my buddy. Me and him, we've been producing and writing stuff for a while now, so we decided to kind of just throw something out there. And I don't think there's any motive for it, or not trying to make it. It's just a fun little thing, and whatever happens, happens. But it's a band called Atomic, and we have one song, and it's out there on Spotify. Oddly enough, how Spotify works, if you type in Atomic, it's The Atomics, which is a rockabilly band.
Or the Atomic, or Atomic Rooster, which is a really old band from the 60s, probably.
Yeah, so Spotify is funny how it, like, puts it in different bands. Because I've actually found bands through other bands because they've been put in the wrong band folder. But we're trying to sort that all out. But, yeah, so that's exciting.
Can you play it? Can you see it online anywhere? Is there any place people could listen online?
Yeah, just Spotify.
Just Spotify is the only place.
Yeah.
And it's what's the name of the song?
I Love It.
It's called I Love It by Atomic. Yeah. Great. Check that out, everybody. What kind of music is it?
It's kind of like a 80s retro. It's more pop than anything. More in the vein of 1975 Daft Punk. More the Nile Rodgers type guitar with
some funky stuff.
Yeah, and it's got like the synth wave. I'm really into synth wave right now. So like those really analog type synth sounds.
Awesome.
And yeah, so that's fun, and just trying to get into that whole thing. And then
did you do all the writing on there and all the production? Or
I this song particularly, I kind of built the track, and then me and him produced it some more, added some stuff, and then Kat Saul, friend of his, she came in and wrote lyrics and sang on it. And that's kind of the whole vibe of what we're going for, like I guess like the Chainsmokers type deal, where it's him and I, and then we build a track, and then we have a singer come in and sing on it, but they're not really in the band, but yeah, they're like guest artist type deal.
So like a hired gun for that track.
Yeah. And like, of course they have the writing,
yeah,
all the writing credit and all that. But yeah, just trying to, you know, who knows what's going to happen. It's just fun right now. Just good. Trying to see what happens.
Like, do you bring people in there for drums and bass, or do you guys handle that?
We're programming all that.
Okay.
And then, you know, the bass stuff, I mean, I'm sure we'll bring in people. What did we do? No, that track particularly, it's all like Moog and synthy bass line stuff. Profit or whatever.
So it's electronic keyboard more so?
Oh, yeah. That's okay. Like the basis of it. But, yeah. So Atomics.
Oh, Atomics.
Yeah.
Okay. Atomics. I Love It on Spotify. Yeah. Cool, man.
So, yeah. So that's that. And then also a part of this guitar and pickup company, Lust for Tone, and been trying to promote that. And
talk about starting that.
It's my buddy in Florida. He's been building pickups for a while now. Now he's getting into guitar building, boutique guitars and pickups. And we've been trying to just promote the company and trying to get it out there. You know, we just did the NAMM in Nashville here, and just trying to get more in the product, do more gear demos of that with videos and whatnot. So. Yeah, that's a big thing, trying to get that off the ground.
It's called Lust for Tone. That's the website as well, lustfortone.com. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, lustfortone.com.
For F-O-R, Tone, T-O-N-E. Great.
Yeah.
Very cool, man. You grew up in Florida, in Jupiter.
Mm-hmm.
When did you know you wanted to play guitar professionally? Like, it sounds like it was just a thing you did, but was there ever like a conscious decision or a point in time where you said, because you're obviously an intelligent guy. So, I mean, you could have done other things. What was there like a defining moment, or, you know, say, hey, I need to do this. What was there?
Well, let me see here. Defining moment. Actually, it's kind of funny. Like when the thing that hit me when I knew, like, I wanted to like play guitar, I don't know, like career wise. I mean, I was kind of a misfit growing up, so I had no direction whatsoever. But I was really into like punk rock and stuff like that growing up, and I dabbled in guitar, and then I was with a girlfriend at the time in high school, and me, her, and her friends went down Fort Lauderdale to see her boyfriend's band play. And in the car, I remember I was like sleeping in the back, and the guitar player of the band had Yngwie Malmsteen playing. And I heard Black Star and Far Beyond the Sun. And I got up, I was like, what the hell is that? And I had never heard anything like that. And that was like, that was the definitive change. That was when I was like, oh shit, wow. And I got like the bug. And then I got into that, and then like Al Di Meola, that was like my first two like dudes. So I was obsessed with Yngwie and Di Meola. And then I, you know, because of Di Meola, I got into like the jazz stuff. I got Joe Pass record, and I just started just getting, I got the bug.
Wow, you know? That's a total change of direction from listening to hardcore, getting into Al Di Meola, Joe Pass.
Yeah. So like, yeah, growing up, it was like, you know, Black Flag and Battalion of the Saints and the Addicts and just all this punk rock stuff that I just loved. And then I got into like Guitar Hero world, and it just bit me. And then, you know, cause when I was before that, like me and my buddies had like a garage band where we played like bad Ramones covers.
Well, they only lasted a couple of minutes.
Yeah. And like we tried to get through those, and then, you know, just different little garage bullshit bands. Mm. And then I heard that. And then I was probably 16, 17, which actually I was in this like shitty metal band, and I could barely play. And then I remember I was at dinner. Me and my mom were eating, and the phone rang, and my mom picks it up. And the other guitar player was like, hey, tell Chris he got the pink slip. And I got fired from my band.
And they told your mom. That was horrible,
yeah,
man.
She's like, Chris, I think you just got fired.
Oh, my.
I was like, oh, man.
That's horrible, man.
So that kind of pushed me to, like, take lessons. And I was, like, taking lessons. And then I got, you know, into the whole really heavy into guitar.
I give you credit, though. That's pretty, like, noble to sit and take the responsibility on you, say, hey, you know, I need to make my playing better, instead of like, oh, those guys are fucking assholes, I'm great.
Yeah, well, you know, the tough love thing is always, it's always worked for me, you know, just like brutally honest. Yeah. I always prefer that over the sugar-coated shit.
Yeah, I'm the same.
You know, so I was just like, it was more like I'll show them.
Yeah, man. Righteous indignation has helped me very much in my life throughout the course of my life.
Yeah, so then I started taking lessons. All I wanted to learn was like theory. You know, I was like, oh, I need to learn theory. That'll be good. And I got really into that. And that's kind of what got me the bug to like, you know, go to school, because I had no direction. So I was like, oh, I'll go to school for music. Why not? And then that kind of started that whole thing. But I originally wanted to teach. That was the whole point of going to school, was to be a teacher. And then after going to school, I was like, no, I think I want to perform. I don't want to teach, really. So then I decided to just play.
That's a good story, man. Very cool. Thank you for sharing that. What do you want to do more of moving forward over the next few years, or even long term, if you have a vision for that?
It's more, you know, studio work and producing really is kind of what's on the table. That's kind of what excites me more. I'm kind of, I love guitar, I always will, but a little burned out on it. I'm more excited about the engineering and producing aspect of music right now. And
is it the Atomics is probably helping you pay tuition along those lines, I'm assuming?
Oh, man, it's great, because, you know, I'm getting my programming chops up and just, you know, learning about all that. And, yeah, it's just, it's so exciting, you know, because the guitar can get, I think anything, if you do it long enough, gets just stale. Yeah. And I love guitar, you know, geez, it's the best, but.
Chris, everyone loves guitar. Sorry, man, I had to jump in there. That was so cheesy.
Oh, shameless plug.
Yeah, that was awful, man.
So that's where I'm at now. And then just the different you know, looking at guitar differently, you know, more, because the misconception, you know, of like the whole, I guess, studio guitar playing is a lot different than like coming to town, like being the shredder guy. It's two different worlds, you know. And production has helped a lot with my guitar playing. And the session thing, of course, helps with guitar playing because you're learning so much about different aspects and timing and just more how important rhythm is and rhythm guitar playing more than playing lead.
That's interesting.
Because lead is overrated. Because, I mean, if you think about it, you're only playing lead, if you even get a lead in a song, what, for 8 bars if you're lucky? Yeah. So the whole lead guitar thing, it's cool. And, you know, there's definitely a place for it, but I think the meat and potatoes is like the rhythm guitar playing and trying to really hone that in, because that's only going to help lead playing. And that's kind of where my focus is now, is trying to just get better at that and just playing parts more pocket and just trying to focus on that. Yeah. So the shifting, you know, with the studio work and producing has shifted my whole concept of guitar.
That's really good. It's probably something you enjoy because you've been doing it so long, as you said. If you're getting burnt out, you know, having a new outlook, it's like a second wind, I would imagine, in a sense.
Oh, man, it's great. Because you always got to find inspiration to keep you going.
Totally.
And I think by default, I've just fell into these things just by curiosity, you know, of wanting to see different avenues of music. And I think in the current state of music, you almost have to.
Yes.
You have to produce, you have to write, you have to engineer, you have to, whatever you're doing. I think just playing your instrument is very, you know.
Well, there's just not as much opportunity to make the money that you could have years ago, I think, is the reality of it.
Yeah. And then just the learning thing of just when you do other things, you start thinking differently.
Hmm.
You know, I think the producer, all great session players are producers first, because you have to look at the song as a whole. And it's guitar playing is out of the, it's not even in the picture anymore. It's the song.
Hmm.
Guitar playing is, you know, it's more orchestration than being a guitar player.
Yeah, it's interesting. I spoke to Jerry McPherson, and he, you know, he's been a session player in like 25 or 30 years. And he said it's the big difference now is you've got to get to the punchline really quick in modern production. And it's not like years ago where people are sitting there willing to listen to, at least let me get to the chorus once or twice. He said,
right.
If you're not, you know, compelling pretty quickly.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and it's like writing a sales letter. If you don't have a good headline, no one's going to read it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about some gear for a little bit. What's your go-to guitar right now? And let's say, what other two guitars of yours would you make up as your top three?
Style-wise, I think like Tellys and Strats are my go-to. So like a Telly, Strat, and like a 335 or hollow body type thing is kind of my three go-tos. But I've been using the Lust for Tone guitars, and they're just incredible. And I have a Telly style and a Strat style, and they're just killing it. So those are my two go-tos. And then I have a couple hollow bodies I use.
Cool. Are there any, you have any interesting or cool stories behind any of your guitars, how you got them?
All my guitars, other than the Lust stuff, is pretty shitty gear. Because I've built a lot of guitars. You know, that's kind of.
Literally yourself?
Well, I mean, building's a rough thing. I put together.
Assembling.
I assemble.
Okay, I get you.
But that's a little hobby of mine, I guess, if I have any hobbies. But. You know, building guitars, but I just buy parts and put them together. So I got a couple Gibsons that are really cool, but most of my guitars are pretty shitty, and I just, you know, put good pickups in them and make sure they play in tune. And I've always felt that I put my money more in the backside where the amps and the pedals are, you know, because I think any guitar can work. I mean, if you look at Jack Pearson, my God. If you're familiar with him, he's a prime example.
Who is he?
Oh, man, he's the man. He's the he's a guitar player in Nashville. He used to play with the Allman Brothers, and he's just doesn't get much better than that guy. But he's prime example of shit gear, because he prides himself on playing like $99 Squire Strats.
Seriously, what kind of pickups did you guys put in there? That, like, what's your reliable replacement pickup that you're using?
Me?
Yeah.
The Lust for Tone. That's what I've been using.
That's what you've been using it, right? Yeah. Right.
And I'm loving them. They're incredible. So I've tried all the companies. I know this sounds like shameless plugs, but
well, if it's true, it's true though.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've tried all the pickups, and I've just been really, really happy with those. So those are working well. But yeah, but back to the guitars, I think, you know, and I think Jack plays completely stock. I think he
prides himself. Stock Squire?
Yeah, it's a stock Squire, and
wow.
He uses whatever gear is on stage, and he always has the best tone. And that goes back to the tones in the hands type deal, because that guy can play literally a Squire Strat, and it sounds better than anybody.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. Oh,
so that shatters the myths of all the guys on the forum saying, do I get the Gibson custom or do I, you know, get the Fender custom?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that stuff definitely, it'll enhance your tone and make it better, no doubt. I mean, you know, the boutique gear is, you know, it's fun and it does sound great, but all you got to do is watch Jack. And just realize that, wow, it's...
Is that P-I-E-R or P-E-A-R?
I think it's P-E-A-R.
I'm going to look him up.
Yeah, Jack Pearson. He's just so good. I can't say enough about that guy.
I have to check him out. Okay, so what about amps? You say you put your money in the back end on amps. What's your go-to amp right now, and what are your top three?
Well, I love Fender-type amps.
Vintage, I'm assuming.
Yeah, vintage. I got a few vintage Fenders, and then there's this company out of Florida I've been using that I really like.
Lust for Tone?
No, Marshy.
Funny enough, this company
I'm plugging all these companies, but Marsh Amps. I've been using those, and I really dig them.
Marsh?
M-A-R-S-H, and he's a builder out of Florida. He builds like vintage Fender circuits, and I have a deluxe reverb and a tweed deluxe. Yeah. So a deluxe reverb blackface type deal and then a tweed deluxe. And they're killing. So
interesting. And so he basically makes new amps in the style of Fender vintage amps.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a million guys doing that.
Yeah, sure. Where is he out of? Where in Florida is he out of?
Where is he? He's in oh man, it's like Hollywood or like Lauderdale area. Yeah,
yeah. Okay,
I think
check that out. I'll look him up online. And
yeah, I love those amps. And then you know I got a lot of amps I use for different things. Music Man amps are great. I got a bunch of those. And then you know of course old Fenders and then Silvertones are killer. So.
Do you have a favorite album maybe, or favorite song?
That's a tough one.
That is tough to narrow it down to one.
There's so many. I would have to say maybe top three
that's cool.
I don't know. Dark Side of the Moon.
Dude, that's mine. That's my top three for sure. How could you not have that album? Yeah.
That's such an amazing one. And then Blood Sugar Sex Magik
by the Chili Peppers.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, there's a few different ones. The Ryan Adams album, I guess it's a self-titled one with him on the cover. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a perfect album, I think. I don't know if it's an album, but the live John Mayer, Where the Light Is, that's mm-hmm. pretty extraordinary. So I guess the Continuum album would be pretty up there. The Daft Punk Random Access Memories, that's pretty up there with me. As far as songs, top songs, maybe Soul to Squeeze by Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah. Good song.
Hurt by Nine Inch Nails. The jazz song Tanya by Dexter Gordon.
Oh, that's way back. Dexter Gordon, was he an alto player, I think? Or was he a saxophone player?
Tenor
sax player? Okay.
And then Echoes by Pink Floyd.
Oh, what a crazy song. You know what's amazing, though, man? If you listen to, like, even some of the last, you know, in Poland, Gilmour live stuff, It was just as good. I don't know if you've got a chance to hear that, but he did a.
He just did the
Pompeii.
Pompeii.
I saw
it. I need to check it out.
It was phenomenal. I was like standing up. I clapped at the end of it, like I was at a concert. Man, it was. I couldn't believe how good it was. It was just phenomenal. Yeah, and it was just. They're my all-time favorite band. So I was.
Yeah, like, me too. I'm nuts over that band. Yeah, you've seen the original Pompeii, right?
Oh yeah, of course. But there was that wasn't a concert. That was just like where they hung out and. You know, set up all their gear and shit.
That's like the most rock star thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was very cool. Like,
who does that? They just got the Coliseum and just played.
Well, apparently, Gilmore's show that he just had, that was the first actual concert in the theater since like 69 AD.
It has, Jesus.
Yeah, it has not.
So is the new one in the actual Coliseum they did?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was just, I mean, the sound was just phenomenal. His band was really good. I mean, in all fairness, the drummer and the keyboard player were really good, but if you're like a diehard Pink Floyd guy, you were able to notice, you could discern that, there's things that Nick Mason and Rick Wright do. Well,
I've always thought that,
yeah.
Because all the stuff, and not to discredit the drummer for Gilmore, he's not amazing, but yeah. I feel like he's too good, you know, like he's not too good, but he's just like he's on the grid a little bit, because Nick Mason, a lot of drummers hate Nick Mason, but I think he's the one, he was the driving force behind Pink Floyd because he played so behind the beat. He was such a lazy drummer, and that's what gave it that feel of that, like this lethargic thing. And the new drummer, like, because I don't know, he did some of these live DVDs, it sounds great, but it's like, it's too tight.
You're missing Nick. Yeah.
Yeah. It's too like ahead of the, where Nick would put it.
He was lazy in the sense he was behind the beat, but he wasn't lazy in the sense of like, he was, you know, he loads of tom fills and stuff like that. He was just,
yeah.
You know, and just, I noticed it in the sound, you know, that was, it's like, you know, you talk about a guitar player, someone can get up and play Hendrix. Someone can get up and play Eric Clapton. But is it, the difference is they're in the hands, you know, and just the same thing I think with the drummer. You just missed it. And the same thing with the keyboard player. It was really good, but there was just certain vibe that, you know, those guys did together that was, you know.
Well, it's a unit. Amazing. It's like Zeppelin or Chili Peppers. When they find those, like with Frusciante, with Chili Peppers, that's the unit. And you know, Floyd, that original lineup and Zeppelin. It's like when you listen to this new Zeppelin with the Jason Bonham on drums, it's cool, but once again, it doesn't have that swagger. He's too like on the grid, like too tight.
He's hits as hard as his dad though. That's what I was wondering. I was, cause his dad to me was one of the hardest hitting drummers ever. Yeah. I mean, you know, but Jason is good like that too. I mean, he hits
he's a killer drummer, but some of Mason and Bonham, that 70s swagger, that's the thing, man. It's that swagger that just drives those bands.
You know who's actually a great drummer and hits really hard? I don't know if you've ever heard of Government Mule. There's a guy named Matt Apps is their drummer, and he's one of the few guys today that pound the skins like that. And what's amazing is, you know, they all, Matt, not really, but Warren Haynes hangs out. But Matt Apps has got to be like, I don't know, 5'5", 140 pounds. And I couldn't believe him because you'd think he was like, you know, this massive. He's really a great drummer, pounding the shit out of the skins, man. You know. Anyway, but yeah, man. So, okay, so those are some good selections you got there. What was your first guitar? And do you still have it?
I don't. I got a nylon string shit guitar off my buddy I traded rollerblades for when I was younger, and
that's
me just kind of like noodling. And then I remember I got a guitar from a pawn shop, and then that kind of started the whole like guitar thing, I guess. I never took it serious at that point, but you know, because we went over that with the. When I got the bug, but yeah, I just kicked around with it, and I unfortunately I don't have those guitars anymore.
That's interesting. I've never been to a pawn shop. Can you believe that?
What?
And I've been living in Florida since 1989. I have to go. I went to the cigar bar a while ago and I was smoking and I met this dude and he was telling me like, I don't know how we started talking and he said, oh, I got a really bad habit. And I said, what? He goes, I go to pawn shops all the time. I said, really? I said, where should I go? I've never been in one. And he gave me like a list of like 20 in Tampa.
There's always cool shit in pawn shops, man.
I've got to go. I'll go with one of my sons.
Down and out. And then they pawn their shit and then you get good deals.
Yeah, I have to go check one of them out. Man, I'll go with one of my sons because they'll be interested in that. What does playing guitar give you emotionally or do for you emotionally or allow you to give yourself or others?
I think it's my antidepressant, really. I mean, you know, like if I'm not practicing or really staying up on it, I get down. So I know like it's definitely like a self-medicating thing for me.
Yeah.
This joy, I guess, you know?
Yeah. No, I do know. I mean, I obviously am not, I can't even talk to you and say I'm a guitar player, but, you know, I have a guitar and I play guitars and every night, I'm pretty good about practicing almost every night. And there has not been a time once where I've, at the end of a practice, even at the end of a shitty practice, where I don't feel better than when I picked it up. So right. I know exactly how you feel.
It's super therapeutic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I notice when I'm playing like shit, it affects my mood, you know? And then when I'm practicing up and I'm feeling good, my hands feel good, man, it's awesome. It's just, you know, it brings joy. And then just, you know, I guess the whole self-expression thing.
This is a hard question for you to answer, I think, but if you weren't doing what you're doing now, what do you think you'd be doing instead?
Oof. Jeez. I don't know if I have an answer for that.
And that's totally cool if you don't.
Yeah. That's all I know, really.
That's great.
Yeah, I got nothing.
What's the favorite part of your favorite part of what you do?
The creating aspect of it is always great. And then meeting new people who have common interests and, you know, the hangs, the gear hangs and the music hangs when you find someone who you connect with and can talk about music for hours. That's great, you know. And of course the gear tinkering. I love that aspect of it.
Do you find it easy to meet people? Like, are you shy or are you pretty outgoing or?
What's the term? Like introverted, extrovert? Cause I don't really leave my house. I don't really go out, but I do. I guess it's pretty easy to socialize for me and meet people. So I guess when I'm in the moment, I'm extroverted, but I'm pretty introverted most of the time.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big thing with getting and keeping gigs is the vibe and how you connect with people, you know.
Yeah, a number of musicians have told me that you know, is and it works whether you're getting hired or whether you're looking to do you want to join them. It's the pay, the music, and the hang. And they said,
pick two of the three.
Yeah, they said as long as you get two to three. But a lot of people have also said nowadays you don't always get two of the three. So if you get one of the three,
yeah,
but it's a strong one, then they'll take the gig.
The hang is everything. I mean, I would take. Yeah, sound terrible, but I would take somebody with a better hang than musicianship if I had to be on the road with somebody.
Yeah.
You know, just because if you think about it, like you're playing an hour or two a night and you got all those 22 hours to spend with the other person, if they're not a great hang, man, it's going to be a drag. And honestly, you know, we're not playing Steely Dan tunes. You know, if you have a good fundamental bass, you're going to do great.
Hmm.
You know, so you don't need some wizard musician. You know, as long as they have a great pocket and they play the parts right, you know, the hang is everything.
It's funny, we're not playing Steely Dan.
Yeah, it's not rocket science. Yeah, I know. You know, it goes back to the whole thing of like soloing, barely ever soloing. Like you don't have to shred, really. I mean, sometimes you do. Maybe it's like an up-tempo thing or whatever. But, most of the time you're just playing your parts. Especially in the newer genres of the newer pop country thing. It's mostly part-based playing. So just play your parts, play it in time with good tone, and you're set. And then the rest of it's the hang.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot. I've talked to a lot of guys that, you know, I'll do these calls sometimes when someone's on the road, and I'm always like, look, I really appreciate it. I know you're on the road. I mean, interrupt your day, and thank you. And they're like, no. You just helped me so much because I now have an hour and an hour and a half less to figure out, oh my God, how am I going to kill that hour and a half?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the depressing part of the road. You have so much downtime.
Yeah. Well, that's that goes to the part of people think, oh, overnight sensation. Yeah, man, you got to sit around for 20 hours a day doing nothing. Your family's at home, your friends at home, your dog's at home, whatever, you know, it's a sacrifice.
That's the funny thing, because the stage, like I said, it's like the 2 hours of glory. Mm. And no one sees the other. It's not like Motley Crue, man. It's not this crazy shit show. It's a lot of like just sitting around doing nothing.
Well, that's another thing I've noticed about all the Nashville musicians. Now, I'm starting to interview guys out in L.A., and maybe it's different, but I don't get the sense, and maybe it's just because I'm in the country pocket, but I've spoken to guys that are sort of like indie bands, and I don't get the sense that it's too wild and crazy. You know, maybe the younger indie bands, but nothing compared to like the conventional stories about musicians, you know.
No.
Nothing even remotely close. Yeah, it's like a pretty mundane sort of,
pretty reserved. Yeah. I mean, every now and then you'll get an artist who's just wild, but that's becoming more few and far between.
Yeah. Which is good. I mean, it's a better environment. It's a healthier environment for younger musicians to be in when it comes down to it. Anything you're currently trying to improve on? Could be musically, personal, business, or anything else.
Yeah, production and, always trying to get better at guitar. And then, mostly just engineering, production, and guitar playing. That's pretty much all I got. Maybe try to lose weight.
That's an ongoing battle, man. I hear you.
Yeah, the struggle is real there. The
struggle is real, man. Last question, Chris. What's your definition of happiness?
Oh, geez.
That's a tough question.
Just having inner peace. And, you know, my mom says, you know, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. So I think finding something that's a job, but also like your outlet, which all of us in the music industry are just so fortunate to have. And I think a lot of us take that for granted, of doing your passion. You know, that's really important. And just having the inner peace and doing that, I mean, that's happiness.
I agree with you, man. And it's funny enough, most of the cool guys that I've spoken to, they all say the same thing. No, and I've been fortunate. I haven't ran into any, you know, tools, but everybody I've spoken to says the same thing. I'm so grateful that I get paid to do this. Is almost
you got to pinch yourself, because all of us bitch. Musicians bitch more than anybody I know. We're all malcontents. But at the end of the day, you really got to step aside, because, I mean, this is your passion, but it turns into a job. So it's like this weird thing, you know, where your passion is your job. But if you take a step back, and I always have this conversation with musicians about, like, well, what's the alternative? You know, you could be working at a bank or doing whatever, a day job, and just dreaming of doing this. So I think musicians always lose sight. I mean, I do too. All of us do. You know, when you're in the midst of just so busy and you're like, oh, fuck this. But, you know, it's the best job in the world.
Awesome, man. Hey, I can't thank you enough for your time. Is there anything you want to promote or let people know about?
Yeah, just check out Lust for Tone Guitars.
Great. Lustfortone.com.
Yep.
And I would suggest people go to your website at Chris Condon Guitars, ChrisCondon Guitar.com. He's got tons of clips on there, and he also gives Skype lessons, so you can check him out, and you can contact him on there and send Chris lots of money. He's a really good guitar player. Hey, man, I mean that. And thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it, man. This is real good.
Thank you so much. This has been awesome.
Good, man. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did. Thanks so much again to Chris Condon for spending this time with us. I definitely appreciate it. And you guys go to everyonelovesguitar.com, sign up to get notified about future podcast episodes, along with some other cool new stuff we'll be doing for guitar players. Now be nice, go play your guitar, and have some fun. Till next time, I'm out, everybody. Thanks for listening. Peace. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.